All right, ready to go.
What's up, everybody? This is Gio.
And I'm Bug.
Welcome to episode 21.
What episode is it?
21.
Are you sure?
Dude, we just had this conversation yesterday. You're going to pull this? Really?
Well, I mean, you know, last episode was just episode 19, so I wonder where the lost episode went.
Okay, I guess for the benefit of our audience, I guess we should explain, maybe, unless you don't want to. You know.
They know. We get the episode wrong. They know. Like I said, it's a thing now, so...
We put a lot of work into this, and we forget stuff, okay? It's just...
We put a lot of work in forgetting stuff. That's the thing. Are we going to talk about movies tonight?
We can. I didn't have anything. I'm in the middle of watching something, so...
Well, what are you in the middle of watching?
It's called Greyhound.
Oh, that's a good... First...
Yeah.
Go ahead. Is that Brian Gosling in that thing?
No, it was, that was Gray Man.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Greyhound is about one of the first submarines in World War II. It was one of the first movies that Apple originally put out when they first started Apple TV.
Has
Tom Hanks in it.
Oh, you're chiming over there, Gio. You're popular tonight.
Yeah, well, let me get persons, whoever be talking to me for a minute.
Okay.
Excuse me.
So, episode 20.
Oh, yeah. Or 21, or whichever it is.
Did you say that was Greyhound?
Yes.
That's 2020? Was that when that was released?
Yeah, it was one of the first ones that Apple put out.
That's cool, because I actually have that movie in my collection. I'll have to watch it at some point.
I do, too.
I was going to ask you about a movie tonight, but we can wait till later unless you want to go right into it.
Go ahead. I mean,
because this covers a lot of topics. Put your goggles on, because we're going to go conspiracy. Okay. We're going to go conspiracy theory or conspiracy fact, depending on what side of the fence you sit on.
Hope your buddy's listening. We all know how he feels about conspiracies.
Well, it's his, you know, it's important to him, you know, and I respect, I had an interesting discussion with one of my former teachers this afternoon. It's nice to have an intellectual conversation instead of an argument with people. Arguments don't get anywhere, but, you know, conversations... are very helpful. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was reminded of a recent movie. Well, it's not a recent movie, but I was recently reminded of a movie that I had watched many years ago, approaching 25 years at this point, which makes me feel really old. But I was reminded this movie existed, and it's so freaking bizarre how it fits in to what's going on around us today. And you may know this movie because it has one of my favorite actors in it, and I think he's one of your favorite actors, too, if I'm not mistaken. Two of them, actually. Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman. Jude Law's in it as well. It's like it was a big movie at the time. Is this ringing any bells for you?
Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, with Jude Law. Ernest Borgnine is in this movie. Alan Arkin. I mean, a lot of top names were in this movie. And I remember at the time, it kind of came and went. and flew mm-hmm. under the radar.
It's not ringing a bell, but that doesn't mean I haven't.
All right, you have you read Brave New World?
Yes.
Okay. This movie is called Gattaca. You ever heard of that?
I may have at one point in time, but I don't think I ever watched it.
Well, this movie is basically a take on Brave New World. It's like a modern interpretation, is the best I can describe it. How you're not born anymore, you know, you're genetically decided. And a natural born person is like against the law, you know, just to kind of have sex and have a normal pregnancy is like against the law. And this one dude, I think is Ethan Hawke. He's a natural born. And it's kind of what's called biopunk. If that makes any mm-hmm. sense. A society driven by eugenics. So like I said, it's 25 years on, this movie's pertinent to what's going on today. And Brave New World was even further ahead of its time. But Ethan Hawke, again, one of my favorite actors. He doesn't pick these roles that are just, you know, fluff, you know. But you got Ernest Borgnine in this thing. You got Jude Law and Uma Thurman of Pulp Fiction fame. Plus others, you know, Kill Bill, all that good stuff. Which I have never seen Kill Bill to this day. I've never watched it.
It's definitely a Tarantino. If you're a Tarantino fan, you probably like it. If you're not a Tarantino fan, you probably wouldn't.
From the previews that I've witnessed, I've always felt like it's just too violent.
It's basically a take on 70s revenge, kung fu revenge films, I guess.
Yeah, he kind of overdoes it a little bit, I think. Just too much of everything.
There's supposed to be a third one, but I guess that's never going to happen.
Yeah, well, you know how that is. But anyway, this movie called Gattaca, G-A-T-T-A-C-A, Gattaca. I'm going to rewatch it because, like I said, it's been like 25 years since I've seen it. And it came up on my radar recently. And I was kind of like, oh, wow, that's very pertinent to what's going on today. I wonder if there's anything I can glean from it from an insight point of perspective, you know. And so I'm planning on at some point revisiting that movie and watching it. I was meaning to ask you if you had ever watched it, but like I said, it had big names in it, but it kind of flew under the radar at the time, if memory serves. I watched it shortly after its release when it came on the premium channels on cable. I didn't see it in the theater or anything like that, but I do remember a very fascinating movie which piqued my curiosity. So as a 46-year-old person, I kind of feel like you know, revisiting 40, you know, as a 46-year-old, I wonder what my take would be on it, you know, this so many years later. But, yeah, I just kind of wanted to throw that out there for maybe the listening audience and yourself if you haven't made yourself familiar with it. And weren't you the one telling me about the Sugarland Express? Somebody was telling me about that.
Yeah,
1974.
It was something that I wanted to take a look at. I watched the trailer. Somebody had mentioned it, or I had found okay. it somewhere. And I think the first time I'd ever heard of it was John Travolta mentions it
in passing, in a movie called Swordfish.
Oh God, yeah, that was an interesting movie. I wouldn't say it was terrible, but John Travolta after Pulp Fiction, I'm not sure his career went up from there. Yeah.
But also has Hugh Jackman and Halle Berry in it. But
Halle Berry, okay, nice.
Nice. But yeah, I'd never actually seen the trailer or watched the movie or anything, Sugarland Express, so I went and looked it up.
Okay.
And it apparently is loosely based on a true story.
That's what I've heard. Didn't it take place in Texas somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have the movie? I can provide it for you.
No, I do not.
Okay. I can lend you a copy of mine. Wink, wink, okay. Nudge, nudge. Okay, well,
anyway.
Have you gotten to 8mm yet or no?
No, I have not.
Okay. Take your time on that, because that's going to affect you like Deer Hunter would, I think.
Yeah, Deer Hunter. I didn't watch that until I was probably in my. You had talked about it. I think I'd never heard of it, and that movie. If you look at films that are about the Vietnam War, that movie will mess you up.
Yeah, you'll get PTSD from the movie. Yeah, and James Woods in it, and Meryl Streep. Deer Hunter is a classic. That movie, and being from Pennsylvania, those people, those hardcore Pennsylvania winter people, just Grin and bear it, blue collar, immigrant family, I know those people. My dad worked with those people. I ate those people. I grew up on their food, when I was a kid. Heartland of Pennsylvania right there. And it kind of struck because that's what, that's that was just so accurate to those people, prided themselves in deer hunting. They did it ethically, and it was a traditional thing to do. It wasn't no trophy hunting. It was, how their home life was affected before, you had their home life before they actually enlisted. That's what I thought was interesting about the movie. They signed up for Vietnam. They weren't drafted.
They were very naive. I know that. But
yeah.
I wonder how many kids were like that.
There were a lot. There were a lot. Their father was in Korea or World War II. They wanted to be like their dad, be a hero. But Vietnam was a different kind of war. There were no heroes. I mean, there were, but not in the welcome the boys home kind of hero type situation. It was a really bad time in American history for everybody, except college students.
Yeah, I think that's one part of history that we don't seem to have ever learned from.
I take a look back on it every now and then. I learned a lot about Robert McNamara during that time. I have a different opinion of him than I once did. I kind of feel bad for his legacy because, he's gone down in history as something I don't feel like he deserved, they credit him to being the architect of the Vietnam War, and I really don't see it that way. I mean, I think Johnson was the architect of the Vietnam War. The war. I remember the Time Life commercials. The war in Vietnam. Time Life Presents.
Yeah, I always wanted to collect some of those. I mean, I know they were like infomercial clickbait.
The Time Life stuff is actually, I get a lot of Time Life music collections, you know. And it's legit stuff, man. I mean, like what? I don't have it here in front of me, but got like, you know, hits of the decades, you know, like the 1970s. It'll have all the number one hits of every year in the 1970s. And you could DJ that stuff, man. You can just load up a playlist. It's like an automatic play. It's like a curated playlist. Just load that stuff up. If you've got a gathering, you don't have to worry. Just let it play ambient. And you've got, you know, if it's 70s night or, you know, what have you, the Time Life Collect, or, you know, the, you know, dance classics of the 80s, or, you know, or, you know, ballads of the decades, you know, they had all these weird collections, and the music stuff's what I always paid attention to, because back when I was a kid, you know, it's like, how can I get the most music for cheap, you know, and, I'd really have to love the artist to spend all my money on one album, you know, of a single artist, you know. It's like, well, I can get this Time Life collection for so many, you know, for so much. And I've got this band on there. I've got that group on there. I've got this artist on there. I've got all these different artists. I have a wider collection, you know. And I think that was kind of the gimmick, you know. Is this, you know, because it attracted a wider variety of people that, hey, I may not like this tune, but this tune's cool, you know. Like, if I grabbed a, you know, metal hits of the 21st century, and, you know, a Seven Dust or a Pantera song is thrown in there here and there, I'll overlook that because, well, you know, we might have Dream Theater or Queensryche type thing thrown in there, you know. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows I'm not. I respect Pantera. I will say that I respect. I respect Pantera. I just don't connect with their music. I have a hard time relating to it. I can't really connect to it. And I've tried over the years not to be a snob about it because everybody I know throws Pantera in the hat when we talk about metal. It's like, how do you not like Pantera? It's like, dude, I just got to be honest. I don't like the music too much, but I completely understand why they have a following. I mean, you know.
It depends on where, what circles you're in. I wasn't a Pantera fan until, like, probably my late teens to early 20s. So, you know, well, but the weird thing is I'm not a Slayer fan, and they're like, how can you like Pantera
and not like Slayer? That, see, that to me is interesting because, yeah,
it just, Slayer is like I can listen to Rain in Blood and it not bother me, but for the most part, I know why they are the way they are. I just never could get into that.
Since you brought up Slayer, I see your Slayer and I'll raise you Mayhem.
Oh yes, Mayhem. that brings back some memories. There's a documentary.
If you can find it,
everybody should watch. If you're any kind of music fan or metal, especially if you're into metal, you need to watch Metal Headbanger's Journey. This is where we found all these different bands, including Mayhem, which are pretty out there.
Mayhem, definitely out there. They live their music, I will say that.
I mean,
let's just say their stage presence is more or less walking off the street and onto the stage. There is no production. It's Mayhem. They what you see is what you get. I mean, which totally blew my mind. It's like, I actually, I kind of was on the fence whether I should be a fan of them or not, because they talk about burning churches and shit like that, and I'm not a fan of that at all. But they live and breathe their music, and it's some dark stuff, man. But the music is totally awesome. I mean, they're very, 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 very talented.
Well, I mean, I just, there's a particular scene in this documentary that you and I have laughed about, and that's how we found Mayhem.
Yeah, go for it.
It is just, it's just the funniest thing I've ever heard of. It's like the guy who did this documentary is an anthropologist, and he was also into heavy metal. So he wanted to do a history of metal, and it's all of its different forms.
Well, at one studying the culture and the lifestyle and the, from an anthropological standpoint, he looked at metal.
Mm-hmm.
Not from a musical standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And at one point he goes to interview Mayhem, and he prefaces this like, this gets a little weird.
And you and I are like, how can it get any more weird than it already has at this point? Because we're halfway through this documentary. And we watched it together that time. Mm-hmm. He gives us that disclaimer, and then what happens?
I forget what the exact, it's been a while since I've seen it. Something about, do people like your music or something? And he's like, who says these things? Point them out to me. What do you mean they don't like her?
And he's got a beer. He's got a plastic cup of beer. And he's drunker in hell. And he's like, who are these people? Show them to me. They're from are they from Finland?
Finland or Norway, something like that.
Yeah, they're Nordic. And so they have that Nordic accent. Show these people to me. Where are they? Where I will kick their ass. and the guy, the documentarian is like, no, just in general. Just generally speaking. Where are they?
Show them to me.
And George and I are looking at each other like, yeah, things did get a little weird there. But hey, I am now a fan of this band. That dude meant business.
I mean, I expected him to pick up a piece of bone or something and go.
I felt like Sasquatch was in the band somewhere, man.
Because he's like, point them out to me.
Show them to me. Where are these naysayers? He's like, no, just in general. Just in general world. Where? It could be a million. He's going to kick a million asses, I felt like. However many it took, man. Mm-hmm. He's ready. He's charged up, ready to go, man. I was like, man, these dudes aren't metal. They are metal. Like, you know, whenever you see a really gnarly picture or something, oh, wow, that's metal. Yeah, these dudes are not that gnarly picture that you're looking at.
This is the kind of poster that if you put on your bedroom wall as a kid, your mom would walk in the room and just go and just like, back out of the room slowly.
This is the kind of band, you hang their poster up on the wall, your house is going to burn down. That's what kind of, I mean, Slayer is one thing, but Mayhem is a whole other level.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes from Lemmy of Motorhead, speaking of which, is like, they wanted to be the band that if they moved next door to you, your lawn would die.
I think in Lemmy's case, they succeeded. God, can you imagine? That's a visual right there. It's like, get this band moved in, and all of a sudden, your pretty grass just died. I mean, wow. You know, I have a feeling that, you know, those random house explosions that's been happening in the last couple of years? Those houses belong to teenagers that have just discovered Mayhem for the first time. And the house exploded.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know any music that I can't imagine speakers or anything that would ever do that. But I mean,
like a Back to the Future type situation when Marty plays the guitar with the metal pick.
Yeah, or there's a scene. I don't know if you've ever seen the remake of The Italian Job.
Yes, I've seen that. Mark Wahlberg in that.
Yeah, but it's like this. At one point, the hacker kid wants to buy speakers that are so loud they blow women's clothes off.
That is so immature.
I know. but secretly, you're like, I wonder if those exist. I'm going to look up.
Well, hey, there is a, in car stereo culture, there is a phenomenon where they have, they have competitions where they, the car stereo is so loud that it, they see who can stimulate a female, just by the volume of the car stereo. I don't know what that's called, but it is definitely a thing in the car stereo culture, which I'm not a part of.
No,
I like music, but not for the sake of being loud.
Yeah, it's gonna be
loud. You know, it needs to be. There needs to be clarity.
That's still a thing. I mean, you can't go down the street sometimes without the trunk rattling or the windows rattling or,
Yeah.
I mean, I thought eventually that fad would die, it was around when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's been 30-some years. Okay. It ain't going nowhere.
No.
Just like, having your pants halfway down your ass. I thought that would go away eventually too, but
Nope. And that what gets me is they intentionally buy their pants two sizes too big.
I think it's kind of cool when they wear like four or five different underwears and layer it. You know, like this underwear is halfway down this underwear is halfway down this underwear. And finally we get to their pants. There's like a fucking Skittle squabbling down the road, Like a rainbow Skittle. The guy's got different color underdrawers. You just count how many layers this motherfucker wearing. And he's still wearing a belt. His fucking pants are around his calves. And he's still wearing a belt for some god who knows why. Yeah.
We used to go to school and the principal would be like, giving kids a rope belt, like a rope, just a piece of rope, like here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, when I was working in the retail sector on night shift, my manager made a dude go in the hardware department and get a length of chain to wrap around his damn pants. Because he couldn't put out freight. He kept pulling his damn pants up, man. My manager was like, this was the good manager. He was like, you can't do your job when you're pulling your pants up all the time. Go in the hardware and get a length of chain and hold your damn pants up. So this dude was walking. He's walking around. He got the fucking gold chain off the hardware aisle. He's walking around a gold chain around his pants. Like, he's blinged out. And, it was just funny.
Yeah. I bet it was.
But people will be people, So, yeah.
People are like, hey, you're doing a show. Let's talk.
Yeah. That was part of the reason I didn't get to you as soon as I wanted to. But we're doing all right. earlier than last time. Yeah, I don't know, folks. Today's Tuesday. I don't know. People don't fuck with me on Monday for some reason. They wait till Tuesday. So, but yeah. I hope the audio quality is good on this go around. I'm utilizing a different microphone just for the sake of trying it out. I don't know. Part of me thinks this kind of sounds better in some ways. I don't know.
The other mic sounds a little bit. I don't think brighter is the right word, but
yeah, better, more highs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Which I don't know. Okay, what else we got on the docket for tonight?
Well, I've just stopped. I used to make lists to keep it organized, but I have since just stopped just because it makes it more fun when you don't.
I think it's more natural just having a conversation. I mean, yeah.
But something caught my attention, and I wanted to do more research in this. You said this has been going on for a while. And I'm glad I'm not in school anymore, because if I had to learn like this, or I was like this when I was in high school, there's no telling what would happen to me. Apparently there's this phenomenon of, which I don't know, you said it's not a phenomenon, but high school students that require a Whoopi or a plush stuffed animal to cuddle with or feel safe.
I only meant that it's not a new thing. I mean, it's been going on.
Well, it was new to me.
At least the last 5 or so years. Maybe a little longer than that.
I mean, I know where it comes from. It's because we have such a...
We have intentionally, as a society, stunted our youth's mental development. They move out of the house later. They get their driver's license later. Everything is done later. When I was coming up, most of my friends were out of the house at 18. They counted. If they were still in school, their last year of high school, they were out by the end of summer. And sometimes that was a requirement. Parents were like, you got to, you 18, you better figure it out, because you ain't going to be here after that. And you get one comeback free. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's like live with your parents until you don't feel like it anymore. You know. And parents don't want their kids to leave. So they accept that. They'll go off to college. They'll live at home while they're in college. If they leave, they'll come back. And a lot of it is the expectation that college students today also feel like when they get out of college, they need at least an 80,000 year
job.
$80,000 a year job.
Which those don't grow on trees, not unless you're really smart. I mean, really, and you're really qualified to do what you do, not out of college.
Not coming right out of college, no, because there's two things you need to get that kind of salary. First, yeah, you probably do need an education. It's not a requirement, but, you know, that's one ingredient. But the second thing is you need experience. And you don't have that coming out of gender studies. I'm sorry.
Well, the thing I always run into is, I mean, even with us, I mean, okay, you go to get a job. Well, your first job, nobody wants to hire you because you don't have an experience. Well, how can you get experience if nobody will hire you? That doesn't really make it doesn't really make a lot of sense, you know. But these kids now, they just, you know.
You can't have any meat without you can't have any pudding if you don't eat your meat. If you don't eat your meat, how can you have any pudding?
Stand still, Eddie. That's a Pink Floyd reference for.
They don't need to know. If they know, they know. We don't need to explain that to them.
I know,
they have to earn that shit, man.
No, okay. Okay. Well, okay. Duly noted.
Yeah, I love our audience. One or two of them. But, but they need, you know, they don't need a free biscuit all the time. They can earn it once in a while. Yeah, for that dude over there in the corner still listening, it was a Pink Floyd reference. He was right. Speaking of music, what was the deal with the Dream Theater stuff you were sending me?
I wanted, since, you know, we've got this little project you want to work on.
Yeah, we could talk about that, too.
It was, when I was explaining to, trying to explain to you yesterday when we were talking, was that whole rhythm, you know, staying in the same, you know, playing
the pocket, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And that's progressive metal.
Obviously.
And that's, you know, I mean, I know we're not, we're nowhere near the caliber of Dream Theater, but I mean, I'm getting into this just because I love music and I love to, you know, create things. I always wanted to do this.
Exactly.
And I just, we were talking about, you know, how to stay, you know, how to, I was trying to explain to you what I was meaning by, you know,
all giving right, me something I'm to sink. I'm going to take over here because, okay. I feel you struggling, homie, and I'm not going to let you struggle. Okay, the dilemma has been creatively that I am a more improvisational musician, and I kind of just play what I feel. And somebody like Gio, who's used to, as a vocalist, is used to something, some kind of cue to go off of. The seemingly randomness of improv is hard for him to sing to because he doesn't musically know where I'm going to go next to meet me there. I don't even know where I'm going to go next to meet me there. So it's always been kind of hit or miss because it's like he's wandering down his road and I'm wandering down my road. And we've always tried to figure out a way to get on the same road and not stifle each other's creativity. And what we have been discussing lately is some ways to where we can kind of meet in the middle on this and try to maybe not get on the same road, but at least head in the same direction and see if somehow we can come together on that level. Did I do a good job of explaining that?
Yes.
Okay. I saw you struggling and I was like, man, I'm not gonna let you hang like that. I'm gonna step in and help you out there. So, well, it's not an easy thing to articulate because for a long time we didn't know where things were. You know, we didn't know how to tell each other what was going on. You know, so
because we're both technical people, me more so in the last few years than you, and it's like. Well, music is something you just feel and you just, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, there's got to be a meeting of the minds, so to speak. And for those, if anybody out there is a musician, you know, chemistry is important.
Hey, hang on a second. Okay. Dude in the corner, you wouldn't just so happen to be a musician too, would you? The one dude listening right now, the one guy in Hesse, Germany, that seems to be a dedicated. To, yeah, okay, all right. I don't know if he's a musician or not.
You know, but yeah, I mean, I love all types of music. I lean more towards the pop side of it and the more, you know, rhythmic side of things and the progressive side of things. You and I have had conversations about, well, you know, like the simple stuff and the punk rock, you know, and the progressive, you know. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I like all that stuff. There's very little I don't like. Country being about the only one that I can't.
God, I feel for you on that, because
country and country and modern hip hop, just I can't.
You're missing out on the modern hip hop. I can agree with it's trash. It's just, I don't know the appeal. It's unlistenable. It's hard for me to even call it music, because there's no melody. I mean, it's not melodic at all. It's just like spoken word poetry. It's bad poetry. It's like,
well, I mean,
a kindergarten, like, wrote it. You know,
when you can appreciate old what they call alternative country now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, and it's not something I'm gonna like listen to a ton of, but you know.
Well, you know, what's his name? Robert Plant did a lot of duets with Alison Krauss.
Yes, I have their first album, and it's one of my favorites.
Well, see there.
But see, I have arguments with people from time to time about.
Do you argue with people?
I like bluegrass.
I love
okay?
bluegrass,
but they're like, okay, that's not very far from country. It's not country. It's not. No, it's a totally different. I mean, it's a, you know, akin to country, but it's not, you know. I mean, ever since I saw Oh Brother Where Art Thou, which has a lot of that kind of stuff in it.
Who?
Oh, brother,
Where Art Thou? Yeah, that kind of has, I don't know. That movie's kind of weird for me. I mean, it's a great movie. I love the movie, but I have a hard time getting the message of that movie. I don't know where it's coming from. And I know that sounds weird, because it seems obvious to a lot of people, but... Is it a gospel movie? Is it a message? Is it a biblical message? Is it just, you know?
It's a comedy for the most part.
It seems deeper than just a comedy to me, though.
I mean, there are places where you're like, yeah. I mean, as George Clooney movies go, which I'm no huge George Clooney fan
either, but I'm gonna give credit where credit is due.
But I mean, for that time period and you know, very much has a very good cast for what it is. I mean, John Goodman.
Oh, yeah.
But I fell in love with the music. I mean, that's where I discovered Gilliam Welsh, she's also a bluegrass musician. Alison Krauss, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wow, I love this music. I mean, it's just a banjo and a fiddle. And there's not like, I mean, my main problem with country music as far as instrumentation is concerned, I don't know what it is, but the steel guitar just irritates the ever-loving hell out of me. I don't know why.
I don't either.
It just irritates me.
I don't know. I don't.
But I think it's because when I was growing up, my dad and mom played a lot of George Strait, George Jones, Tammy Wynette.
Great.
Good music. Barbara Mandrell, Crystal Gayle. Oh, yeah.
She plays steel guitar.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it was. It was always on heavy rotation, and I just got, you know, I heard it too much. It was just like, okay, I'm. So when I discovered pop music in the 80s, like Journey, I was like, oh, or the Beach Boys, or
yeah. I grew up in a multifaceted household as far as music. I had older siblings. You know, my sister listened to a lot of, you know, pop, rock. My brother listened to a lot of heavy metal, rock and roll. My dad listened to old school rock and roll. He loved the 80s metal when it was coming out. My mom listened to everything, you know. So I had everything except country in my house. That was the only thing.
My parents listened to everything too, except for I didn't know this until I got a lot older, that my mom, you know, was into a lot of different things. My dad, he just stuck with the old standards. Like, I mean, Hank Williams Jr., Hank Williams, buddy, which I can respect now, but when I was growing up, it was just like
old stuff.
Just like not, you boring. Know, because they just, well, because every time I got in the car, that's all I heard. And I never wasn't exposed to a lot of stuff until I was a teenager. And it was like, I got exposed to the, my sister played the crap out of the Grease soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. I think my sister did too. She had a Bee Gees 45 record player, and she had her little collection of 45s. When she upgraded eventually, she gave that to me. That was my first record player.
My sister and I would pretend to be in a band and play and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And then I, you know, of course, got into the Beach Boys and, you know, all the 80s music. I could. It wasn't until much, much later in life that I really got into heavy metal. And because back in those days, you know,
your house, heavy metal was probably not even permitted in the law.
Yeah, I mean, like when videos first came out, when music videos first came out, like I remember sitting at home one day and I'm flipping through the channels. And back then you had, you know, music video channels.
The real MTV.
Yeah, I mean, you had, you know, that and a bunch of other stuff. And I flipped on, it was a Christian music video. You know, which that was the when I discovered Christian rock, which is basically nothing more other than rock with a, you know,
a
biblical message.
Yeah.
Which some would argue like, well, that's evil. That's, you know, that's devil's music. You got that segment of the population, but has always existed. But anyway, I turned on. It was a DC Talk video. And they were doing a cover of the Doobie Brothers, Jesus Is Just All Right With Me. And I'm watching this video, and my mom's like, comes in the room and goes, turn that off. I'm like, what? It's Christian music. I don't care. Turn it off. I'm like, what? Wow.
That, I couldn't imagine that happening in my house. Because my brother was actually, you know, playing guitar by the time he was 14. So, and my parents always, it's like when he, you know, he's playing Smoke on the Water, that was the first song that he learned on the electric guitar. I don't know if I ever told you the story of how my brother got his Stratocaster.
Have you talking about the Ritchie Blackmore one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have I ever told you that?
You have told me, but for, you know,
you think the audience would be interested in hearing that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I grew up limited means, you know, and my parents, my dad was a coal miner, and for many years that wasn't a very, I mean, it paid the bills and put food on the table, but it left room for very little else. And the extra, you know, all the extra money that you know, could be spent on frivolous things was saved for Christmas. You know, that's when magic happened. That's when we got all our extra stuff, you know. So my brother has saved and scrimped. He's mowed grass and this, that, and the other thing. And he bought his first guitar, which is the Les Paul knockoff. I still have it. It's a Les Paul knockoff. And that was a guitar he learned to play on. And I've been meaning to get that guitar in playable condition, but part of me is like, just leave it alone. He had bought that guitar on his own, is my understanding. And he saw its limits as a guitar player. He saw its limitations. And he, one of his heroes was Ritchie Blackmore. Deep Purple was one of his favorite bands. And Ritchie played a Olympic white Stratocaster with a maple neck. And my brother desperately wanted a guitar like his hero, Ritchie Blackmore. And so he'd asked my dad, my parents, can I have that guitar? I can't afford to buy it, but, can I have that guitar? So at that time, this is the early 80s. His guitar is an 82. So I'm going to say it's right around 82, 83. Okay. And he tells my brother, he's like, look, you play Smoke on Water. That's impressive. You're doing a pretty good job. He goes, but I'm going to make you a deal. To show me that you're serious about playing guitar and you want to take it to that level before I spend $1,000 in 1982 money on that guitar for you, I want you to play Stairway to Heaven all the way through. And my brother's like, even the solo? My dad's like, yes, all the way through. The solo, everything, the whole, from beginning to end. You come to me when you're ready, whenever that is, and I will buy you that guitar. Now, my dad thinks he's slick. He's like, there's no way in hell he's going to learn that song. That's one of the most difficult solos to learn at his level. He's 14 years old. There's no way in hell he's going to learn this whole song. My brother was like, determined. So he did it. He learned to play that song, and he it was a real serious moment in time. He went to my dad, and he's like, "Dad, you ready?" And my dad's like, "Okay." And on that cheap guitar, he played "Stairway to Heaven" all the way through in its entirety. My dad was floored. He had no words. He was completely and utterly amazed. And he knew he had to keep his promise. I mean, we were struggling, but he made a promise to his son, and he's like, deal's a deal. So Christmas time was rolling up, and he had to find a white Stratocaster like Ritchie Blackmore. And this is a point in time where Fender was in a transition. Stratocasters weren't very common because they had moved their factory to Japan, and the employees took ownership from CBS right around this time. So there weren't many guitars. His guitar was made in Fullerton. Which makes it a very expensive guitar. He modified the crap out of it, so it's not as, to me, it's worth, it's priceless. But as far as the collectible goes, had it been original, just like he had left it, it'd be worth, quite a bit of money. But he modded his guitars, and that, he was an artist, and that's cool. But anyway, my dad went to my uncle, my aunt's, who I bought, the same uncle who not too long ago I bought his amp, his GNL, and his Schecter, T100, PT100. I bought his gear here recently because that's why my brother started playing guitar, because we idolized my Uncle Ed. And, you know, to this day, my Aunt Ellen and Uncle Ed are my favorite aunt and uncle. And I'm very close to them. And so whenever, you know, my Uncle Ed came to me and asked me if I wanted to buy, you know, his gear, because he wanted to keep it in the family, I didn't even negotiate price. Whatever he was asking for it, I bought it. So I have a very rare GNL F100 right now. It's pre-lawsuit. I can get into that at another time, but cherished possession. I caught the Gannett's collection. But so he went to my Uncle Ed at the time, and my aunt and uncle had a band called Second Chance. They played a lot of popular cover tunes at the time, and they were a gigging band. And they had a Klipsch PA system. That's one of the reasons I have Klipsch speakers to this day, because I remember how good they sounded back then. And so my dad went to my uncle and was like, look, I got a problem. Do you know of any guitar shops that have, you know, that could potentially have a white Stratocaster? So my uncle knew of a place in Pittsburgh. It was a small little kind of hole-in-the-wall guitar shop. And the guy had an inventory in his basement that was left over that he was having a hard time selling. So he said, well, I have to check in the basement, see if I've got anything. And sure enough, he had the exact guitar my brother wanted. An Olympic white Fender Stratocaster with the maple neck. And my dad bought it, and he set my brother up on Christmas morning. You know, he did like a scavenger or like a wild goose chase type deal, you know, where he opened this letter and go to this part of the house, and you'll find something there. And he get to there, open this letter, and you go to this part of the house, and you'll find something there. So, you know, he's having my brother go on this wild goose chase. And eventually, when he came back to the Christmas tree, his guitar was on the stand there in front of the Christmas tree. And my brother was just like, oh, I found it. And that's a guitar. That was his number one until Dave died. When we moved here, he eventually got a Black Les Paul. Which I still have. I've got two of them, actually. I've got his twin brother that I have imported back to America from Japan at great expense, mind you. Having a guitar shipped overseas from Japan, price of the guitar plus the shipping cost plus the import duties, all that shit. But it was worth it because I wanted to twin to his Les Paul. And it's a one-year-only guitar. So I the fact that I've got two of them, it's very special. But he played that Les Paul a lot, but his Stratocaster was his number one. That was his baby. If he did any recording or if he did any... Anything that he really wanted to put particular care to, he used the Stratocaster. And he swapped out the bridge and middle pickup to Seymour Duncan Fat Strats. So it doesn't have the original pickups in it. And I talked to my music tech, my guitar tech, and he's like, you know, if it were me, I would just leave it alone. I wouldn't try to put it back to original because, you know, that was your brother's guitar. It's the way... He, you know, that was the way he set it up. And, it, you know, you can get I've got two Stratocasters, you know, of my personal collection, you know. So I don't want to say Stratocasters are dime a dozen, but there's only one of my brother's Stratocasters, you know, and he made it his own. And I just thought that was really, it was very special. And it said a lot about my dad, too, because my dad was trying to get out of buying the guitar, but my brother called his bluff, and he kept his honor, you know. He's like, well, I made the deal. I got to buy it now. And he did. He went to the ends of the earth, so to speak, to find that exact guitar that my brother wanted, you know. I have one that's a couple years older. You know, my brother's Stratocaster is a Fullerton 82. And mine is a 79. And you paid dearly. Mine's all original, unmodified. It was literally under a bed in a guest room for 40-something years. And the guy never played it. He bought it when he came over to America from England, settled in Chicago, got married, bought this guitar and a matching amp. And I tried to find that amp. God, did I try to find it. They had no it was a cash sale. They had no record. I was gonna buy it off of the people that bought it. I was gonna, hey, you can make money on this amp. You know, I'll pay so much over what you pay. How much did you pay? Okay, well, I'll pay this much for it. I really felt like the two belonged together, but no deal. So I got a twin reverb instead. I think I had the twin before, but the Princeton, I've got a Princeton and my brother's a Rivera era Concert 50. So I've got amps for every occasion. Only thing I don't have is a Fox. But
Fox, yep. I love the way those sound, but they're expensive as hell.
They are, and they're loud as fuck too. So I use an amp modeler on my Mac, where I, you know, that models the Vox, but it's not like the real thing, you know. It's like I had the house to myself today for a little while. And I cranked Big Jim up to a nice neighborly level, if you will. And that's when I busted out my baritone SG, and I told you that I was working on that tune, and it came out even better on the baritone. So.
Yeah, man. I'm looking forward to some of this. We don't get together very much. I mean, I live in one part of the country. You live in another. So.
Yeah, man. But we still in the South, though. We still in the South.
Yeah, it's not that long. I mean, you
didn't go full Yankee on my ass. So there's that.
No. Yeah.
Never go full Yankee. Yeah.
Watch it, man. I mean, technically my mom's
no, she's been in the South too long, dude, man, because, you know, if that was the case, then you would you'd include me in that, and I don't include me in that, so
yeah. Okay, well, that was interesting.
You think so?
Yeah, I should we talk about what we're currently? Well, something I was telling you about yesterday. It was a book by Ari Fleischer. For those of you who don't know,
I haven't read the book, so I don't know.
I'm in the process of reading the book. I've only gotten through first like a couple of chapters. And but it is fascinating. What drew me to this was he was on Fox News, which I'm not a big. I will watch just for stuff, but I won't. It's not. I'm like, eh.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Fox News.
I mean, they're a source, but they're not like... but anyway, he was on there talking about how, you know, biased and corrupt the media is.
Yeah, which is surprising because usually when he was George Bush's press secretary, he was always very professional. You didn't really get any bias of him. You knew he was conservative because, you know, he's working for a conservative president. But other than that, he didn't really get into his personal politics a whole lot, you know.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, but a few chapters that I have read, he's talking about, you know, how journalists are created today and how they are, you know, how it's very, one-sided to the point to where, because I didn't think about this until he pointed it out or that I read this.
But you didn't know the journalists were one-sided?
Well, no, but in terms of like how they're trained and how they're which is part of the problem, I think. And he points this out, is like the media itself is dying, you know, as far as journalism is concerned, because they're all trained by Democrats. They go to college and they're educated. They don't get like competing views or anything. They don't get to make up their own mind so much. It's just, this is the way you do things. This is how it is. I mean, I don't think these people are brainwashed, but at the same time, it just seems...
Indoctrinated is the term that comes to mind.
I mean, college, and they seem to think that unless you're a college-educated Democrat, then you must be stupid. I mean, there are people that think Trump, our former president, should be, you know, for some reason they all think Trump is a redneck, which is weird to me because
he's not even from the South at all, or the rural. He grew up in New York City, for crying out loud. I don't know. Speaks more to their ignorance than it does.
It does, but I just, how do you make that, just the way they make that leap?
Whatever, they can't argue on the issues, so they have to make it all personal.
They have to make it up completely.
Or that, yeah.
I mean, or, it's like, they lie, they make, yes, I'm sorry to say, they do.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I'm not... If you don't like Trump, that's fine. I'm not going to sit here and try to evangelize Trump. He's got enough support. So he doesn't need me campaigning for him.
Okay, it's about being objective, in my opinion.
But the thing about it is the proof's in the pudding. If you take away all the media hype and look at his presidency on its own merit, in spite of all the controversy that was manufactured, I might add, by the media – and the Hillary camp, if you look at everything that he's done as a president, he wasn't that bad. He's actually quite a good president. Peace in the Middle East, record economy, 3.5% unemployment. Everything was buzzing and humming whenever he was president. And I don't know why people couldn't just sit back and soak it up and enjoy it. It's like they had to bring him down. It's like, why ruin a good thing here? Okay, so he's not batting for your team. That's cool.
They're miserable, so they have to make everybody else miserable.
That's really what it feels like. It feels like sore losers. You know, it feels like if my president did that, it would be okay, but he's not my president, so I can't support it. I know people that don't even pay attention to any of this. It's just, are they Democrat? Okay, I'm voting for them. Just hands down, I'm voting for them. I asked one person, I'm not going to say any names, I'm not going to out anybody here, but I asked one person, I said, name a Republican, name a conservative that you actually liked. And they said, Ronald Reagan. And I said, did you vote for Ronald Reagan? No. So even though you liked Ronald Reagan, you still voted against him. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I wasn't old enough to vote
for him. The Clinton campaign was when I jumped in. Clinton was running. And I voted for Clinton. I'm not happy about it, but I did, because who else am I going to vote for? I wanted Bush number one to stay in a second term, but it didn't happen.
Well, I wasn't old enough to vote for until probably Clinton. Either Bush Senior or Clinton. I can't remember which. No, not Clinton. But I wasn't really interested in politics for a number of years, and everybody said, well, you should be, and I just never got into it, you know. I didn't really get into it until Obama, and we thought
we were doing the right thing.
Yep.
God, was I duped. I'm not gonna speak for you on that, but man, I feel like I was duped.
We were a house divided.
Well, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
All the flack I took for voting for Obama, I never heard anybody on the conservative side tell me why I shouldn't vote for him. That was the thing that really, had I heard a decent argument, I may have been swayed. But I'm going to vote for McCain, really? I mean, John McCain.
Yeah, I never could hear a decent argument why you shouldn't. I felt the same way about Trump. Oh, he's this, there, and same thing I felt. I mean, Obama, nobody knew. It just felt like they were trying to, you know, oh, he's this, he's that, he's not born in this country, and blah, 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 blah.
I still don't, he admitted that. I can't find the video on YouTube anymore, but he was in Kenya, and he admitted that he was Kenyan. It's crazy.
But, I mean, never mind, I mean, my philosophy, once I started getting into this, was I don't care who, regardless of what I think about the who's president, regardless of who I voted for, I respect the office. Okay, never mind that he's the current president we have is, well, interesting, but I still respect the office. So ergo, I try to respect the man who holds that office. But to be honest, he's making it hard.
I don't feel like the current one holds that office legitimately. So
neither do I.
Same respect. But I feel you. Respect the office.
There's enough evidence out there. I don't want to get into the whole, like, because we've been down that rabbit hole. And, we voted for who we voted for. People voted for who they voted for. You believe what you believe. It's, you vote your conscience, regardless of what that conscience says. I mean, the press, they follow whoever they, they think they can exploit, I think, especially now. I think Donald Trump was the first one in recent memory that they couldn't do that, and that pissed him off. I mean, he plays these people like a fill.
And they fall for it every time. When I figured that out, I remember you and I talking about that, And it took me, and it was frustrating because I was the same way. And so I was like, man, get off of Twitter, man, dude, shut up. And then I figured it out. And I was like, oh my God, he's a genius. They fallen for it. You know, because he'd distract them. He'd say something outlandish on Twitter, and they'd be talking about that shit for 3 days. Meanwhile, he's got this executive order signed, or he's passed some bill through, and they don't even see it. They're too worried about some stupid tweet that he did or some stupid quote that he made.
And they're still doing that. I mean, I know. He's not even on Twitter, and not just him, like anybody that's Twitter is gospel. I mean, I've literally watched
Twitter's on its way out, honestly.
They are. But it's funny because I remember watching, it was either CNN or somebody, like you'd be sitting there and like you could see like a scroll of tweets behind the news anchors. And I'm like, really? This little bitty social microblogging platform, which is all it is, a microblogging platform. I mean, I remember when you couldn't even write more than 20-something. What was it, 25 characters, 26 characters? That there was a limit on how long your tweets could be.
Well, there still is technically a limit. I mean, you can't just go writing paragraphs. I mean,
yeah. But, I mean, I was very reluctant to join this, and when I did, it was just like, this is okay. I mean, it was cool to, I followed people more than I actually tweeted, but.
I use Twitter, I've got a couple friends that are on Twitter that aren't on Facebook, and I communicate with them that way, and that's the only reason I have a Twitter account. Other than that, I'm not even on it that much. Every now and then I'll remember, let me see who so-and-so is up to. I gotta check Twitter real quick. But as far as me tweeting things, and it's mostly direct messages. I don't think I've tweeted anything in a long time. I apologize. If y'all can hear the dinging in the background, I'm a popular dude. What can I say?
Yeah, I apparently.
I keep looking. I think I take care of one person, and then somebody else has hit me up, and I'm like, really? Y'all wait till now. But it's all good. It's all good. Like we've talked about, I'm not one of these people that hide behind the magic curtain as far as the production stuff goes. And that's another thing, going back to music, that's another thing I'm a big fan of. I'm a big fan of imperfection. Like, if you listen to the original recording of Shine On You Crazy Diamond, when he's doing that long intro, David Gilmour's doing that long intro, you can hear a string slip and it kind of twonks, you know, it's got a twang in there, and they left it. And I'm like, you know, that reminds me that a human played those strings. I like that string slip. I like that imperfection in there. And it's so weird because Pink Floyd is one of those bands that each take has to be perfect. They've recorded stuff over and over again until they felt like they've got it right. Like when they did Live at Pompeii, they would do a section of a song, and then they'd go back. They had a extremely expensive 16-track mixer on site, and everything was recorded to 2-inch tape, and that was what Adrian was to use for the soundtrack. He couldn't use his audio gear to put in. He had to use their recording of it. And after each part of the song, the whole band would go to the 16 track and listen to the playback. Even though this is a live freaking recording, they're still double checking their takes, and if they didn't like it, they would have Adrian shoot it again. And Adrian, I forget his last name, the director of that, he talked about that, how, you know, they had like 7 days to record that whole concert, and he's getting worried there because they're being so particular about each take. But it stands up to this day. I mean, the audio from that album and that movie, the documentary, I wouldn't say documentary, but I guess you would say the concert film, is impeccable. I mean, it's one of the first 16-track recorders on the market in 1971. They haven't done Dark Side of the Moon yet, and that was the thing. They had studio time booked at Abbey Road to record Dark Side of the Moon, and so they didn't. They went to Pompeii to do this thing real quick, the Live at Pompeii thing, and they had a narrow window there to get back to the studio to work on Dark Side of the Moon. And in the director's cut of Live at Pompeii, Adrian included some of the footage of them at Abbey Road recording Dark Side of the Moon, which I think is very historic. I wish he would have kept more of that footage, but they didn't know what that album was going to be. They were still recording it. But imperfection in music, I think, when you hear the string slip or the fret noise on the guitar, or you know, the bow slide the wrong way on the violin or whatever it may be, it humanizes the music. And I think that's what I like about records, is the imperfections. It's not the perfect. From an audio standpoint, it is an exact reproduction of the music. But the fact that it's got to, you know, the over time, just because it's mechanical, physical, you know, it gets the little pops and the hisses here and there, and the shush. And, you know, I remember early as a child getting a hold of some very rare records that belong, you know, to friends that, you know, it's in their basement. Here's a junk, I don't know what to do with this. But me being fascinated, putting those records on for the first time, and you hear that before the sound starts, whether it's music or whatever. And another thing, this is kind of weird. I don't even know. I'm going on a tangent. If you want to interrupt me, that's cool. Another thing I'm fascinated with is utilitarian records, like sound effects records or promotional records, or stuff they would use in like radio stations for sound effects and stuff. They had to do all that manual. They, you know, now we have soundboards. You just hit a button, doop, doop. You have your jingle queued up. But they while they were talking, they would cue up the needle on the record for, you know, the jingle or the sound effect. And their timing had to be so good. They had it lined up just right. Drop that needle. Hope everything went well. And have that flow in a seamless manner. It's an art form. That's one of the reasons I love Adam Curry. He is one of those old school DJs that, but he's also old school in the sense that he's, you know, the wizard's hiding behind the curtain, and you don't get to see the magic, you know.
Yeah, I am a big, I wish, more. I respect modern radio stations. I mean, they're a dying art.
Yeah,
they're dying. But I love radio. Always have. I used to collect WAV files when that was a big thing, where you could collect sound files.
God, I remember you used to do that. You used to send me some.
And I wish I still had.
And now you don't like jingles. That's kind of weird, man.
No, it's the repetitive. It's not that I don't like the stuff. It's just after I've heard it so many times, I'm like, okay, I'm over that. Put that away for a while, and I'll come back to it. I think that's something to do with, you know, as you get older.
You know, oh yeah, possibly.
Your thing goes, like, okay, I'm tired of hearing that, you know.
Your thing?
Your brain just kind of like, I'm tired of listening to this. That's why it takes a long time for stuff to hit me just right to where I'm like, okay. Because you sent me music or you know, bands that you're into or different things. And I'll be like, I'm not. And you're like, how come you're never into something? And like, I'm just not. You're never happy. I'm like, I'm not feeling it. As you like to say.
Pretty much.
And, and like I went, like you for a long time were in, and you still are into the whole hip hop, country rap, which I think is the goofiest thing. I think
there's some of it's very serious, like Coal Miner's Prayer by, Coal Miner's Lullaby by, God, what's the dude's name? I don't know. That gets me teary-eyed, you know, because my dad's a coal miner, and he's been in some dangerous shit, and it just hits home, you know. And I'm from that area. He's talking about West Virginia, and my dad's from Southwest PA, so it's all the same terrain, you know. And, because, you know, they're pretty much connected. You got the tri-state area, you know, you got Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, you know. And it's pretty much all the same people that live in those corners. Hey, we got jingles, man. We got jingles.
That's my puppy dog. She got stuck in here, so she's...
Right, we got jingles happening.
I hate to cut this a little shorter than normal today, but I'm being called to do something else.
I guess that's a wrap then. Wow.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this happens from time to time. This happens when you don't live alone and people pester the crap out of you. So.
All right. We'll continue this on next time, episode 21. And next episode will be 22. And y'all have a good one.
Until then, I'm Gio.
And I'm Bo.
Later.